Welcome, Gilbert, Bob. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for... Oh, crap, what day is it? I'll figure that out and be right back. Yeah, I checked it out. Tuesday, January 26th. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, January 26th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I do not have Yvonne Bo with me this week. At our usual time on early Monday UTC, Yvonne was unavailable. And I did other things with the family instead of doing this. So it is now Tuesday. And I'm actually trying to knock this out while I'm driving to work. Once again, I've done this once before. And I'll probably do a little bit on the way to work and a little bit on the way home. You know, fun stuff like that. We got a couple things to talk about this week. First of all, I will tell you the one thing I'm really not going to talk about. I am recording this on Tuesday the 26th. On Wednesday the 27th, Apple has a big announcement that everybody anticipates is going to be their new tablet device, plus some other announcements. But the tablet thing is what everybody's really excited about. I'm not going to talk about that other than to say, you know, I'm eager to see what they do too. But chances are, by the time anybody listens to this, you'll already know. So I'll sound incredibly stupid if I try to speculate about it now. So I'm just not going to. And let's move on. So the next thing is that I've been wanting to talk about ever since it came out, and I haven't posted anything on my blog because these days I save that kind of thing for the podcast, is the Supreme Court decision that affects campaign finance, United something or other, blah, blah, blah. First of all, let me preface by saying I am not going to talk about the legal merits at all. I don't know. I haven't studied it. I, of course, am not a lawyer. But what I'm going to talk about is from the point of view of what I consider, anyway, to be right and wrong. And I know I will be put in a, you know, like, I wish Yvonne was here because I anticipate that he probably disagrees with me on this one. So the first thing I'm going to say is I come from a fundamental core principle of every right that exists. The right to free and unfettered flow of information is close to number one on that list, if not number one on the list. And I think any abridgment of that whatsoever is an awful, awful thing. Because I fundamentally feel like you should have the right to see any information that's potentially out there. And not just that, if you are somebody who wants to share something with the universe, you should be able to share that too. And let's get into the corporate personhood for a slight bit. I think it's completely and totally irrelevant here. I think the idea that corporations are people is a ridiculous idea. They are associations of people at best, and I don't believe in collective rights. Not for corporations, not for various minorities. I do not believe in collective rights, period. It should be about the individuals involved, and you should treat the corporation as a collection of individuals and as an association in that way. However, I think it's irrelevant. I don't care who's producing the information. I don't care who's paying for it. I think that there should be absolutely zero, zero, zero restrictions on any of it. If somebody produces a piece of content, they should be able to distribute it. And I don't care what that content is. I don't care how it might influence an election. That should be an absolute, unfettered right to put that information out there, to distribute it, to make sure people see it. And yeah, you know, then people can evaluate as they wish. And, you know, for those who've listened to me before, you know I go further than this. I think copyright is abominable. And that the very notion that somebody should be able to create a piece of content and then retain some piece of control over it is ridiculous as well. That once you put something out there, it's out there and it should be freely accessible to everybody. But that's going even further and off topic. But if any type of speech deserves to be fully protected. Like, okay, make your argument about copyright. Make your argument about yelling fire in the theater. Make your argument about, you know, restricting libel and restricting, you know, incitements to violence and, you know, the worst of the worst pornography, whatever. Make your arguments on those things. I'm going to disagree with you on those things, too, most likely. At least almost all of them, maybe even all of them. But if there is one thing that it is more important to protect than any other kind of expression, it is political expression. It is thoughts and feelings about how government is run, and therefore it's more important to protect those expressions than any of those others. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about keeping, in this case, corporations, from being able to put out into the public domain, and I'm not using public domain in a technical sense, I'm using it in a more general sense, put information out there that people can consume. Now, and I think it's vital to have that out there. If somebody has, you know, something that is potentially relevant to the political discussion, it is in the public interest to have that available, period. That includes, go off on one of my rants again. I go so far as saying that includes hate speech, that includes the opinions of, you know, political parties like the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan's not a party, but you know what I mean. But I think it extends that far. But certainly you want this speech out there. Now, time for the counter-argument. People say that because of the disproportionate economic influence of large corporations, this means that our political discourse will be controlled by what these big multinational corporations want to spend money on, and consider that a problem. Now, I'll grant you that might be a problem. I'll grant you that in an ideal world, you would want a political discourse where everybody's voice is completely equal. Every viewpoint has equal access to the airwaves, the mass media, however you want to put it. And I think, by the way, the development of online communications of various sorts have led us a long way in that direction. But clearly we're not there yet. Clearly someone who speaks on one of the major networks or through a major newspaper or has the money to buy advertising in those places is going to get heard by more people. But I think the answer here is not to restrict the speech from happening. It is not to keep those ads from being bought. It is not to keep those documentaries from being produced. It is not to keep that stuff from happening. It is to address other parts of the process. If you do anything at all, to be honest. But if you're going to do anything, you should try to figure out a solution to this problem that does not involve stifling the expression of these ideas. And I don't care if the ideas are true, false, abhorrent, good, bad. You shouldn't be in the business of stifling ideas, period. It's a bad precedent, it leads to bad things, and even if it wasn't, you know, a slippery slope, in and of itself, it's already bad. So, what do you do instead? I don't know, you know, there's the old things about disclosure. There's the things about making the person come on and say, I approve this message, to make it very obvious. How effective of those are, I don't know. I think a big part of this, the right solution, would be to go further in the direction of protecting open access to communication lines like internet communications of various sorts, because what they end up doing over time is reducing the influence of the big players and making it easier for small players to be heard. Now, are we a long way from that being where you would really want it to be, to avoid outsized influence of the big players? Yeah, we probably still are. But I think that's the direction you want to move in. You know, if there's a problem with big players having an outsized influence, then help the little players have more voice. And by little players, I'm not talking about public financing of political campaigns. I don't think that's the answer either. I don't think that having a public finance solution and then restricting donations to... No, that's nonsense, too. I'm talking about encouraging the systematic growth of low barriers of entry to getting information out there. I think anything where you are increasing the amount of time, effort, whatever required to get out there is bad. Anything where you make it easier is good. Let's make it nice and simple like that. When you make it harder for the big guys to communicate, when you put all kinds of regulations on political speech, you're just potentially making it harder for little guys too, because they wonder, oh, okay, there are all these regulations. If I write something that supports this candidate, do I have to worry about XYZ? And the answer is, in most cases, of course, under current setups, no, you don't. But who knows in the future? And, you know, as people have pointed out, you know, is there a media exception for this? I mean, because all of the big media in this country is, almost all, I should say, is owned by large corporate interests. So if you say corporations can't do this, but media can, you know, you of course just, all you have to do is buy a media outlet and you can do all you want. Witness Fox News. So, I don't know. But of course, now that it's opened all up, you know, we can see, you know, it will change how things are done. But I think, again, you know, okay, A, opening up communication to other people, encouraging that systematically so that you level the playing field more by lifting up the guys that have little ability to communicate rather than pushing down the people who already have a lot. That's A. B, let's get serious about, you know, rules on, influence peddling and various things like this. In general, I'm very much against restricting speech, as we've talked about, but I have no problems whatsoever with the idea of restricting the freedoms of people who have voluntarily chosen to be legislators or otherwise in the government. I think there should be vast restrictions on these people in terms of, who they can associate with, who they can, I'm going a little bit overboard there. Let's not say that. Let's do a much more modest proposal. And yes, I'm going Jonathan Swifty on here. You know, if there's a big issue with the people in government doing stuff to favor the people who gave them donations for the next campaign and stuff, let's not only do term limits, let's make damn sure that the legislatures don't benefit and have an automatic death penalty at the end of any government term. So you want to be senator? Sure, you can be senator for 6 years, but at the end you're going to be dead. So therefore, you know, do your best for what will help people, and, you know, you're not going to help yourself because you're going to be dead. Okay, you know, obviously I'm kidding there. But, you know, extensive term limits, limits on what you can do outside of government after you've been in government, much, much more transparency on who you meet with, who you talk to, who's donating to what thing that you're involved in. I've said before in the show, I would be fully prepared. You know, and again, I'm doing these radical proposals that'll never happen. But, like, I would be very cool with an idea that, you know, anybody in government, you strap a webcam to their head and broadcast their movements 24/7 as long as they're in government. You know, so that full transparency about, you know, who they're meeting with, what they're doing, whatever. You know, I'd also be in favor of all kinds of changes to the way legislation happens to get rid of to make it much more transparent. None of these things are going to happen, of course. But my point is, you can be creative. You can start trying to think about things that you can do that address the real problem here. The real problem being that the influence that large corporations potentially have on the process, both on elections themselves and, for that matter, on the process after the elections. I'm not sure from what we've seen that there's really a big, big difference here. You know, whether or not they can get involved in the election phase, they're certainly involved after the election phase in influencing things in various ways. So, you know, cut down on that stuff, but leave the speech alone. Leave the ideas alone. Let, you know, there should be no restriction on the promulgation of political information. And that includes, you know, things that aren't, you know, you or I are not going to like. It's going to include things that seem like, or maybe are, blatantly inaccurate, blatantly lies, you know, and they're going to get out there, and they're going to get into the right communication. Or they're going to get out there, and people are going to see them, and people are going to make judgments based on them. And, I mean, it's an old saying, and yes, there's some flaws in it, but, you know, the answer to speech, to bad speech, is not restricting that speech. It's more speech. And I think that's so critical here. And so I think, you know, again, I'm not going to judge based on the merits of the law, but in terms of the result, I think you had the right answer here in terms of what the Supreme Court ended up doing. That a lessening of the restrictions on how political information can travel and be spread. And I think that's the right answer. And, you know, we'll see. It will have all kinds of bad side effects. I don't necessarily think the end result to how politics works in the United States will be good if this is the only change. Because, yes, there will be all kinds of influence and things going on and barriers to, you know, it's going to be harder at first for the quote-unquote public to sort of get a fair shake when compared to the big message coming from big corporations with lots of money to throw at it. But I think you have to fix the problem in other ways. I think this is the right decision, you know, in terms of how it affects speech. Now, there's another problem, and you have to go fix that problem. But you need to fix that problem without messing with the flow of political communication. That has to be unfettered. That's like one of the key elements in a democracy, is completely as I knock my headset out, completely unfettered flow of political information. I mean, and I know that never exists anywhere, and there's always biases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the closer you can get to that, the better. Anyway, I've arrived at work, so I gotta stop. After I get out of work in a number of hours. It'll be Wednesday UTC by then, but thank you, and we'll be right back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Lack, by Fortunato Salazar. I'm a round me up a jug of Roundup. I'm a watch the kiddies walk on water. I'm a pour the putting green a cup. I'm a spend the evening at the theater. I'm a tap the ass of Maria Callas. I'm a tap that ass and sermonize. I'm a tap the ass of Buster Douglas. I'm a tap that ass and write a note that says, forgive the lapses in my rusty Greek. Forgive my dancing naked at the sink. Forgive my tattoo of a rattlesnake. Forgive Parliament and Funkadelic. I'm a get down on it with my blender. I'm a tap the ass of the greenskeeper.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
It is a number of hours later. I am done with work. I'm walking back to my car. I hope you enjoyed your poem of the week, by the way. And, let's see. Well, what's to talk about next? Well, yeah, first I'm, of course, walking to my car. I'm going to get in the car. I have a soda, and I have a cookie that I got, like, you know, on the way out. It is now, by the way, Wednesday, UTC. So let's move on. Oh, yeah. And over the, during the break there, I had a whole conversation, Brandy. Ended up going to the dentist and needing to have a root canal. So she's having all kinds of fun with that right now. So anyway, fun stuff. The main other topic, though, I wanted to have while I make my way home this evening is Democrats. Sucky, 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 stupid Democrats. And I'm talking about healthcare. I'm talking about the way that they've reacted to their loss in Massachusetts, and just in general about how much Democrats suck. And let me preface this by saying, you know, particularly on healthcare, I am deeply ambivalent around the healthcare plan that was actually being tossed around. And yeah, for those of you who've listened to the show before, you know, this is not a topic where I have a lot of really strong feelings, healthcare, that is. I feel like, okay, yeah, there's some problems here. Yeah, we need to probably do something better. I'm willing to try something different, but I don't have any really strong feelings on one solution versus another, versus this, versus that. You know, I just don't know. And it's not something that I feel super passionate about. It's not something where, you know, I'd be up for trying, you know, what was going through the Senate. But I'm not going to be going to rallies saying, let's get healthcare done either. However, I don't want to talk about any of this in terms of the merits of, you know, the healthcare proposal that was going on. I want to talk about it in terms of, in general, the Democrats showing a face that is how any sort of watcher who is not a partisan themselves and who is not, you know, one of the chattering classes that pays attention to this all the time, how anybody in that category can come away with any feeling other than the Democrats are a bunch of incompetent fools who can't run anything is beyond me. And yes, at the moment, this is mostly about Congress, but it completely rubs off on Obama as well. Now, let's start with Obama. I've said before, he's doing exactly what he said he would do. He's all about, you know, finding the middle ground and compromise and, you know, letting Congress do their thing and, you know, negotiating the details of plans and getting a little bit from here and a little bit from there to get a little bit more support and blah, blah, blah. He's all over doing that kind of stuff. So it's what people should have expected having listened to his stuff. On the other hand, that's the kind of thing that just doesn't play well. You know, if you're looking at overall impressions of somebody, the person who says, we need to do this because it's right and the other person's wrong, sends a clear message that people understand and they'll either get behind or they'll oppose. On the other hand, if there's the person who says, look, you know, it's complicated. We would really like to do this, but if you did this, it has these potential negative side effects, so you can't do that completely. Plus, these folks don't agree with that, and so they're going to block it, so you can't do that at all. But if instead of doing that, you do this thing that's sort of halfway there, but partially, then maybe you can get these other people on board, and then maybe you can do something, and then, you know, maybe we can take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, make this, and, you know, and this isn't all good, this isn't all bad. It's a messy, messy world, and we have to figure out a compromise in the middle that makes sense and can push us forward. That actually may be the sanest, most rational policy around, but it plays horribly politically. Now, do I want politicians who play to the politics or politicians who try to get the best policy? You know, I really want the ones who try to get the policy and the, you know, and are pragmatic like that. However, I recognize that it just, it doesn't work in this situation. The end result that we're seeing here is potentially you get nothing. Or you get something so watered down it doesn't really make a difference. And maybe that's all you can get. I don't know. But looking at, so moving on from Obama, because he's a, I think he's a sideline to this, because he's got a, you know, 3 more years until, you know, just under 3 years until his next election. But really the Congress here, the congressional Democrats, have just shown how utterly, utterly, utterly unable to do anything they are. And I'm not a big fan of party unity. I'm a fan of individual members who aren't beholden to parties. And but, you know, a world where that's really the case would have sort of people, your Congress would be evenly distributed across the ideological spectrum with a lot of middle ground people, as well as people on the left and the right, and that's not what we have here. You know, the Democrats and the Republicans, it really is a bimodal distribution, you know, with not very many people in the middle. You've got a handful of people, but, you know, when the Republicans were in power last, they never had the kind of majorities that the Democrats have had recently. You know, during the Bush administration, you know, the Republicans had a majority in the Senate a couple times. They had a majority in the House a couple times. Anyway, regardless, the Democrats, as they were this time around, were at a high water mark, much higher than the Republicans ever got to. However, the whole time the Republicans were in power, you got the impression that they got whatever they wanted. Now, maybe that's not 100% true, but that's certainly the impression that folks were left with. You know, things like the Patriot Act, passed by an almost unanimous, you know, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but vast bipartisan majorities. This was not a contentious issue, you know, thing. There were, you know, and, you know, warrantless wiretapping and all of these things that went through. I mean, you know, Obama voted for the warrantless wiretapping stuff in the last few months of him being in the Senate. And, you know, you certainly got the impression that the Bush administration got what it wanted. Because on any single issue, you'd have the Republicans and you'd have a certain number of Democrats who would go along. Sometimes a small number, sometimes a lot. And whereas here, with a smaller minority, it seems like the Republicans can stop whatever they want. Yeah, and of course that's an exaggeration. We know there's plenty that's actually gone through. But, you know, on something like healthcare, the Democrats spend months and months and months and months and months on a long, confusing process where Obama pretty much the whole time stepped back and just sort of said, yeah, as long as it does these three things, I don't care. You figure out the details. But they spent a huge long process on it. And in the end, you know, they lose the one Senate seat, and now everybody panics. Oh my God, we can't do anything. It's all lost. It's all lost. And, you know, so there's a lot of folks who are just pass the damn bill. Have the House pass the Senate bill, get it done, then work on passing things to change or improve it or work out the issues that the House had. And maybe that'll still happen. Or maybe not. But the end result is, the impression that everybody in the universe has is the Democrats spent most of the year futzing around with this healthcare thing and ended up getting nothing done. Now, whether or not what they would have done would have been good or bad, entirely separate issue. They pissed away the whole year and got jacked up. And then when they lose the one Senate seat that gave them a 60-vote supermajority in the Senate, they run around like chickens with their heads cut off, having absolutely no idea what to do, looking despondent, panicking, and Obama's pivoting onto economics and is not going to talk about healthcare anymore, although he says he's not giving up on it, whatever. But he's all of a sudden pivoting and talking about deficits and spending freezes and all kinds of other crap. And they just look like idiots, you know? And this is one of the places where, okay, you know, Democrats in Congress are probably never going to be cohesive. And okay, fine. And moving back to Obama for a second. Yeah, this is the kind of place where leadership does make a difference, where even if they had failed ultimately to pass it, if he had come out very strongly for a very specific set of things he wanted to get done and used his political capital to try to get it passed, A, he might have succeeded, maybe. But even if he didn't, he'd come out of it looking like a fighter who tried, as opposed to something else. And the Democratic Congress might have been corralled a little bit to look like they were actually doing something too. Now, we all know they're a bunch of idiots, you know, but maybe they would have looked a little bit better in the process. I don't know. Now, you know, I've said before, I think in general, government not doing anything is often the right answer. I tend to lean that way. I'm scared when the government does something, especially when the government does something big. Now, am I scared when big corporations do it too? Yeah, I'm not sure they're much better. But in the end, I wish for people who seemed like they were actually competent at doing anything. And it seems like what you have right now in the Democratic caucus in Congress is not people who know what they're doing. It's not people who know how to lead. It's not people who know how to craft policy that works. You get to see the meat grinder. You know, we got to see, you know, all the little deals, like the, you know, give Nebraska a special break and do this and do that. And it just makes them all look it makes them all look corrupt. It makes them all look unprincipled. And that's probably not fair. And I admit that's probably not fair. But it's about the optics. It's about the perceptions that people take away. And they're just not good here. They're just not good at all. And what would I have them do differently? What would I have them do now? I don't know. I mean, fundamentally, you don't have, you know, the best thing politically for them to do probably would be for the House to suck it up, pass the Senate bill, then work to see what else they could get done. At least at that point, they've done something. As many people have pointed out, when it comes to the midterm election, at this point, it doesn't matter. You know, the people who voted for healthcare voted for healthcare. It doesn't matter what the specific form of that healthcare bill is. You know, the overall electorate doesn't care, doesn't know. The attack ads that come out aren't going to be any different, or not significantly different. You're still going to be, you know, the Democrat who voted for the big government solution to healthcare. And it doesn't matter at this point. You know, the little things that, you know, the House is worried about in the Senate bill that they'd like to change is not going to make a difference to the politics at all. You know, so the question is there, do you do something or do you do nothing? And is the something better than nothing? And there are a lot of people like Howard Dean and others arguing that actually nothing is better at this point. And maybe it is. And maybe I'd even agree that nothing is better. I don't know. I haven't studied the merits of the actual things being considered, to be honest. It sounds like there are some potentially good things in there. It sounds like there's some potentially bad things in there. As with most things, it's a messy and complicated. But I don't know if they're going to get the political willpower together to do that. I think it certainly seems like, and the impressions over the last week are that everybody's been running as fast as they can away from it, and they just don't want to deal with it, and they're scared, and they're discouraged, and we lost 10 Kennedy seats, so, oh my God, that means the sky's falling. You know, and if that's how people react, you deserve to lose. You deserve to lose all of those seats. You deserve for the Republicans to take back the majorities in both houses of Congress. And, you know, I've 538.com has done some runs, and they say, you know, there is a chance that the Republicans will take back the Senate, but it's not a super big chance. It's like 6 or 7%, given the races that are open right now and what they look like at the moment. But, you know, 6 or 7% is nothing to sneeze at either. It's not negligible. But for the most part, that's probably not going to happen. But they deserve it. And, you know, I've said before, I think the best possible combination is a Democratic president and a Republican Congress. So I would not be upset in the slightest if that were to happen. And I think that, you know, come November, will I be looking at the Republicans on my House ballot? Oh, yes, sir, yeah, I will. Well, I always look. I always look at everybody, and I don't generally vote Democratic either. I've split all kinds of tickets, and I've voted for Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents, all sorts of people. But is there, independent of the merits of the individuals running for office, do I see a benefit in flipping Congress to the Republicans? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I think that that balance is the balance that makes the most sense. And would the Republicans continue to be obstructionist? Yes, of course they would. Would they try to pass some stuff? Yes, they would. Would they be able to find a few things that Obama could get behind and support too? Yes, they could. You know, so, I don't know. It's frustrating to watch what all of that, what everything is going on there. It's just messy. And it just seems like they could do so much better if, you know, the leadership was a little bit stronger, if more, you know, more willing to crack the whip, more willing to sort of drive an agenda, then, you know, maybe there'd be a different impression left. And like I said, in my ideal world, there wouldn't even be parties. Everybody would be voted in as individuals, and they'd be from all over, and it would be a much more even distribution, and there'd be much larger number of centrist pragmatists who weren't so much beholden to one side or the other. But that's not the world we live in. Given the world we live in, it would be nice to see both sides be competent when they're in power. I mean, it seems like the Republicans, when they were in power, you know how to drive an agenda. Now, very often that agenda would be very frustrating to me, but they know how to drive that agenda, and they know how to push things through, and they know how to get things done. So, you know, the Democrats just look like idiots all the time. And in this case, Obama isn't helping. I mean, he's got, you know, a huge amount of, you know, rhetorical skill to push a vision and push a direction and be able to get people to rally behind him. And he kind of hasn't bothered to do that. And I understand, you know, his fundamental nature is looking for that compromise. So, you know, behind the scenes, he may have been very much in the dirt looking for that compromise. I don't know. It sounds like he was kind of hands-off for that, too. He may also believe fairly strongly in, you know, something that hasn't been advocated for a while, which is, you know, Congress really should make policy, and the president should implement it. But Congress just ain't ready to step up to that plate, especially not the Democratic Congress. They're just not able to do that. And when they do it, you see them driven by all of the interest groups. You see the insurance lobby rolling over them. You see all this stuff happening. And you don't see, you know, I very much generally like the status quo and incremental change. But if you are going to come in there and start tinkering with things, you might as well go all out. You might as well change things in a fundamental way that'll make a difference. The most frustrating thing in the world to see is people tinkering around the edges on things that aren't really going to make a big difference, and if they do make a difference, will only make it worse by, you know, sort of adding bureaucracy, let's say, without actually adding any significant amount of benefit, you know, or something like that. It's just frustrating to see that kind of nonsense and that kind of waste of time and effort and resources and, you know, and seeing people fiddle around for 6 to 9 months or whatever and come out with something that doesn't really, you know, address, I don't know. From what I've read, you know, what came out of the Senate would kick the ball forward, would make some changes that actually do make a difference to a large number of people. And that's good, I guess. But they can't even get that done. And there are all roads forward. Even now, with only 59 senators, there are ways forward. And people seem to be scared to actually, you know, put themselves on the line in any way and push for something to happen. I don't know, frustrating. I'm repeating myself. So I think I'm going to close up very shortly. I got like 2 minutes before I pull into my driveway at home. So thank you all for joining me on my commute. It has been fun and exciting. I will get home in a couple minutes and, you know, see how Brandy is doing. She's been dealing with that tooth thing, and I don't know what all is happening. The root and canal is scheduled, and there might be follow-up stuff that has to happen after that. It's going to be messy. I have to take her somewhere tomorrow morning, apparently. Fun, exciting stuff, and I'll have to watch the baby. Tomorrow is going to be a work-from-home day for me. I've got a lot of stuff I have to get done. I'm going to end up watching the baby a lot, so it'll take me longer to get stuff done I need to get done. So I'll probably be up all night tomorrow night. Fun stuff. Oh, and of course the Apple tablet announcement is tomorrow morning, which again I'm not going to talk about now because by the time you guys listen to this it may have already happened, but that's also going to be right smack in the middle of all that. So fun, exciting stuff. Fun stuff. Were there any other major news announcements over the last... You know, I guess I did mention Obama's proposing that freeze. There's also the State of the Union address is happening Wednesday evening. If anybody listens to this before then, take a listen to the State of the Union address. Yvonne and I may talk about it next weekend. Or maybe not. We'll see. Those tend to be fairly lackluster, and the president proposing all kinds of things that everybody knows is never going to happen. And I finished like 2 sentences later, but it turns out the little thing cut me off, and I didn't notice till after I'd gone home, talked to Brandy a little bit, ordered a pizza, and I'm actually leaving home again right now to go get said pizza. But what I was saying, State of the Unions tend to be incredibly lackluster. President proposes all kinds of things that everybody knows is never going to happen. And they do that annoying thing where they bring someone in and have them sit in the balcony and they sort of point at them and use them as an example of something or other. And I hate that. And I was really hopeful that Obama would drop that tradition, which I think only started with Ronald Reagan. I could be wrong. But I was hopeful that Obama would drop that in his sort of fake little pseudo State of the Union that he did last year. But he didn't, so he'll probably do it again this time, and that's really annoying. I hate that tradition. I wish it would die. Anyway, that's it. Really, this time. We're done. Thank you for joining us. As usual, if you have any questions or comments, email me at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E at A-B-U-L-S-M-E.com. And or comment on my website at abulsme.com when I post about the show. And, of course, tell all your friends to listen. We like listeners. We like feedback. We like all of that kind of stuff. If people you know don't listen to this show, tell them they should, even if they really shouldn't and couldn't care less and would be bored. You should tell them to listen anyway and see if they do. Anyway, that's it. Goodbye. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to go and pick up our delicious pizza, take it back, and eat it. In the meantime, goodbye. Listen next week. See you then. Bye.